Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Matt.
Hey, Matt. So Chris is busy, and Matt is here with me. So thank you so much for co-hosting all the way from the other side of the world. I can't believe we're able to do this. And this week on The Weekly, so Deck of Lousy Things, the Army Painter Fanatic series, Help for Janelle Jacquez, Forbidden Psalm End Times Edition, Epic Mantic, and Megna Gothic Malgast.
So, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, we'll end very metal. We'll end very hardcore, very metal. All right. So so somebody's going to come up in this first story about the poor release of Deck of Many Things, and that is Kyle Brink. And so continuing our Brink Watch, it is day 286 since Kyle Brink told three black halflings he should step away from the hobby, as all cisgender white men should, to allow the hobby to become better. And he still has not done this, so we're waiting. We're waiting, Kyle.
You know, every time you say that, if I know it's a podcast, right, called Three Black Halflings. But when you say that, I just imagine this Kyle Brink guy is hallucinating and talking to these three black halflings.
It could be. At this point, it could be. Yeah. He's trying to talk. He's backpedaling. He's like, you know, we're not that bad, guys. I mean, really, you know, yeah. We've contributed to the hobby a little bit. I mean, I really don't need to give up my job, do I? Yes. So we're getting there. We're getting close to a year of this procrastinating, but we'll see. But this first story could be the beginning of the end for Kyle Brink. This was quite a mishap, and he's taking the lead in explaining what happened. So D&D's Deck of Many Things will not ship due to production defects. And so, quote from Wizards of the Coast, "I cannot in good conscience ship this stock." So this is pretty strange for Wizards of the Coast, a company that their major income is Magic the Gathering, which is cards. They're having trouble printing cards. So very interesting, interesting problem. So they're doing a new version, a physical release of the Deck of Many Things, and having some pretty big production defects. It was expected to release November 14th, so the 14th of this month, just a couple of weeks. And a quote from Kyle Brink, of CEO of D&D. Executive producer of D&D. "We are going to be suspending the ship date until we can get to the bottom of this and remanufacture and redistribute copies that don't have these issues." So Brink spoke with Polygon. He said, "The defect rate is too high. I cannot in good conscience ship this stock. We fully need to inspect it, understand how many units are defective, and all that." So this is going to be the and Deck of Many Things first appeared in 1975. It was a magical set of playing cards. This is going to be a super deluxe and super expensive product, which is going to contain 66 tarot style cards with foil applique, two hardcover books, the Book of Many Things, and then the card reference guide. The Book of Many Things book, not the card reference, will still be digitally available. Oh, it is now, because October 31st, so the end of last month, it became digitally available, as well as the cards in a PDF version. But the physical versions have many problems. So the quality issues consist of convex and concave cards that won't shuffle well. They kind of stick to each other, uneven card stacks. All 66 cards don't line up together on the short side. They're all different heights. Uneven corners, stress creases from handling, additional creases and damage, and then additional cosmetic issues, including I think what they're going to try to blame, and I think everyone is going to have growing pains or kind of adjustment with this, is they're trying to use more environmentally friendly packaging. So they're moving away from cello wrap and everything to hold the card. So to reduce waste in packaging with non-biodegradable plastic, they're all moving towards paper banding and paper wrapping. And the paper bands that were on these decks especially were done too tight, and they were actually removing the applique on the cards themselves where they were touching. And another quote from Brink is, so this is all for a good cause. Obviously, we want to reduce plastic waste, so we will use paper packaging. We inspect very closely everything throughout the production process to make sure everything was going fine with that. And yet some of the problems that we're seeing here are specifically because some of the paper packaging that we use. So, yeah, it looks like they're going to be struggling to figure out, how to move away. But he didn't blame either the Chinese or American-based printing partners. Just said that, we're going to learn from this problem. And so this problem doesn't happen again because we don't. The excuse is this. We don't make a lot of cards for D&D. But you do make probably the most cards of any other company for Magic the Gathering.
Walk across the hall and talk to the magic people, Kyle.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and that actually makes you very curious about how much division there is between departments, and if it's like, no, we don't talk to the D&D guys. Those guys are losers. We're the Magic the Gathering guys.
Yeah. So a little old man background on Wizards of the Coast card production. Mm-hmm. Like when Magic initially came out, they were using a European company called Cartamundi to make the cards. Then in order to take control of the whole thing and theoretically save money, they bought Cartamundi, right? And then they shut down Cartamundi and outsourced all their card making. They're lying in the bed they made. You know, this is like their stupidness coming back.
Right. Wow. Yeah, it's really amazing. Oh, and I didn't get to the best part. Sorry. The best part is that this deck of many things retails for $110. So that's for two books and a deck of cards for $110. I mean, how much foil applique can be on this thing that it's worth $110? So, the product has already been sent out to sellers like Amazon, so they're going to have to call things back and take a look at them. But I can imagine it's gotten into the hands of people that are going to sell the bad products anyhow. So their reputation is already going to get damaged by this, not just only for the delay, but because some of those card sets are probably going to get out there and people will, be able to complain about those because, it's really hard to trust a lot of these big online retailers like Amazon. They do whatever they want, and their sellers and the people in their marketplaces sell whatever they want. So we'll see if they can actually recall everything. And optimistically, they said hopefully by the end of the year everyone can get the reprinted version, but it may not be likely because this recall will take a while.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this the first time there's been an official physical version of the deck of many things?
I think so, yeah, because it used to just be a reference for a deck of playing cards. And this deck is also doing a couple of other things. It's giving you mechanics for inspiration. So the DM can deal, I think, three or four cards at the beginning of a session and say, with inspiration, you can buy one of these things, like a re-roll or, whatever. So it'll be like to not make inspiration so wide open, each session can have kind of a little bit different flavor. So those extra, 14 cards that they're including involve things like that. Some new mechanics to change around some of the basic parts of 5e. But I did read about inspiration having its own card mechanic now, if you want to do that. But I think this is the first time to do it. And it could have been a really great release. I mean, not for $110, or at least they could have broken it up so you could just buy the cards, or I don't know. Or I guess maybe the digital. Well, digital is never cheaper, but we'll see. We'll see what happens with this. But all of those people dreaming of their Christmas sessions of with their deck of many things may have to wait.
And was it digital? Was it a PDF that you could just get?
I think so. Yeah, they said that
that feels like something they're trying to get away from, right?
Right.
To force
right.
people into.
Yeah, and that might be the price. Yeah, they said the book. I guess one of the books is available digitally. I don't think the card reference is. Yeah, so the Book of Many Things hardcover is available as a PDF. The card reference is not. So maybe the cards are not as well. Maybe they're making it kind of a deluxe item, a deluxe physical item. Wow. So if it's $110 from Wizards of the Coast, how much is the Beetle and Grimm's deck of many things going to cost? I'm speculating like $550 possibly.
Right.
And it will be all new illustrations.
How big a suckers are you, D&D players?
Yes. Yes. So So Kyle, that's just one more reason to step away. I'm sure somebody, you know, a more diverse staff, a more inclusive staff, a more inclusive leader would have been able to handle this, but not you, Kyle. All right. So we'll see you. We'll see you in about 100 days and see if you're still hanging in there. So another new release. This is from Army Painter. Army Painter is doing a new series of paints they're calling Fanatic. And they gave some details about the dates and the features of this new paint lineup. So Warhammer had, they've been doing acrylic paints for fantasy miniatures for a while, both kind of army, you know, military-based releases and then fantasy. And a lot of the colors are kind of color-matched to Games Workshop colors so that you could, they were a cheaper alternative. And I think they're produced in the U.S., so a cheaper alternative for North American customers to do this, and they're coming out with a new series of very differently pigmented paints. So some mystery paints were sent out to various, you know, influencers and painters all over the world, and they've generated a lot of feedback. So they got some usage details along with what people thought of just the color selection and everything. So this has been in development for about 4 years, and so the Fanatic paints will have exceptional coverage and very different, more vibrant colors. So it's a new set of 216 acrylic paints. So 8 reformulated skin tones, reformulated metallics, 18 effects paints, and an 18 wash line of washes. So these are supposed to give you the best coverage of any paint that they produced to this point, which already their paints had very decent coverage themselves, but they've been taking a ton of feedback over these 4 years from all the paints they've been sending out. So they're talking about coverage. So you can't make a paint hold enough pigment to actually cover in many cases. So the more pigment you add, the less it actually, it's kind of this reverse thing. However, they've managed to use 300 to 700% more pigment in these new paints, depending on the colors, so that they generally, if there's too much pigment, they don't cover and they separate. And they've been able to use stabilizers in the mix to give a nice paint flow. They cover well, and they have insanely nice saturated bright color values. So often yellow can't be painted directly on a black base, but this actually covers and looks good. So they're kind of solving some of the problems. They're going to release these colors in a flexible 6-color triad system. So there'll be 4 triads for each set of traditional colors. And so you'll be able to, instead of having to mix each color, you'll just be able to go straight to a bottle and do kind of the next step. So like the mid-tone or highlight, they'll do these little triads for you. And each bottle comes with 2 mixing balls. So that's nice. The dropper bottles save paint. And plus when there's mixing balls already inside, your shaking is much more effective. So so this Fanatic line, that's a lot of new paint, and they're color matched to their existing spray lines and air paint lines. However, these will be taking the place of their existing war paints. So this new formulation is going to be their new default. So a complete mega set and a complete set of Fanatic paints will be available for pre-order January of next year, and the starter sets in February, and then singles will come out later in 2024. So yeah, we're seeing a new a revival of the Army Painter line, and they're very affordable. It's, you know, similar to Vallejo, they're half the price for almost twice the paint. So it's quite a deal compared to some other companies with very inconvenient little paint pots that seem to let in the air and let your paint dry out and all that good stuff.
When I was in my super Stargrave hustle, I used their contrast paints or whatever they call them, and I really liked them because I'm a very impatient painter.
Right.
So I really appreciated that, and the yellow thing you're talking about, that's awesome, because light yellows and light oranges are infuriating to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm never happy with how they look.
Yeah, yeah, to get decent coverage and have a real vibrant, yeah, mm-hmm. vibrant tone is very difficult. Yeah, usually you're, if you've based it or primed it in black or gray, you're going to have to go over first white and then then mm-hmm. your yellows and oranges to get anything that looks even reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I look forward to seeing how that goes. And they did reformulate because they had some, I don't know how accurate it was, but they did have some sabotage from Vallejo talking about the reactivating of their speed paints. Speed paints is what their version of contrast paints. Vallejo was kind of dissing them and saying their paints were no good because Vallejo was releasing their own line of that style of paint. And so there was a army painter did do a 2.0 of their speed paints as a reformulation to prevent all possibility of any kind of reactivation. Because in a lot of cases, people are using those speed paints or contrast paints just as one part of one tool for painting. So it's not the entire model. So they'll want to use speed paint and then be able to go over it and maybe do further highlighting or washes or whatever. So any reactivation is very inconvenient or very impractical. So yeah, they did a 2.0 on their speed paint. So yeah, so they're getting all completely revived. Yeah, I thought the coverage on their original paints was not bad at all. The my original army paints, I did a lot of when you had to do white details and things on like Infinity models. I really like the army painter's coverage. Yeah, whites, don't even go near whites with Citadel paints. All of their whites are either chalky or clumpy, or they're horrifying, and they don't cover at all. And for dry brushing, I guess they're okay, but that's about it. I've had really bad luck with Citadel white. All right, so this is some very sad news for the tabletop industry. So we got a notice last month, kind of the end of October, Janelle Jacques is going to face a long road back to recovery. So this is a very important figure in kind of American game design and also video game design. So it's amazing. Her resume is insane, insanely productive and moving from different industries. So you may know this designer from the Dark Tower and the Caverns of Thracia that were produced for the Judges Guild. But she also worked on Pac-Man and Donkey Kong for Coleco to bring that to the home video consoles. And then also worked on the Age of Empires series, Quake 2, Quake 3 Arena, and was the cover artist for TSR's Dragon Mountain. So yeah, from the mid-70s. She began working in tabletop and has just either through physical desktop or tabletop publishing or computer gaming had a huge effect on a lot of different industries. But unfortunately, currently a GoFundMe that was set up by Rebecca Henneman that said they are crowdfunding to offset heavy medical costs. So it was October 15th that Janelle fell ill. And 36 hours, she was barely alive and hooked up to a respirator. And after numerous x-rays, CAT scans, and blood work, they found nothing. Eventually, they determined that she had a neurological disease, and they diagnosed her with Guillain-Barré syndrome. So she responded to blood treatments, and it looks like she has 4 weeks in the hospital, followed by 6 to 12 months of rehabilitation. So that's going to create a mountain of medical bills. So Rebecca Henneman set up a GoFundMe to help offset that and it had a $50,000 limit to it, but it's a goal and it's already exceeded that. So anything over that will be very much appreciated, I'm sure, because the medical expenses in the US are just insane. Mm-hmm. So they're near Atlanta, Georgia.
This one kind of resonated with me because when I've gone through different periods of trying to learn more about the history of Dungeons and Dragons mm-hmm. and everything, and her name always comes up. Mm-hmm. Her Dark Tower, like the stuff she did for Judges Guild, happened during a time in TSR's history, which is hilarious, where they mm-hmm. were convinced that making adventures for D&D was not the smart thing to do. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, no one's going to buy them, right? And then she makes, like, with Judges Guild, Dark Tower and everything, mm-hmm. and they're like, they sell tremendously, mm-hmm. and they're kind of the blueprint almost for, you know, commercial adventures for a while. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's kind of a big deal. And then, like you said, she jumps into video games and does amazing there. And it was. I hope it all works out. It sounds like it is, but mm-hmm. yeah, it's scary stuff.
Yeah, it really is, and especially when the doctors have no idea. They're running all these tests, and they have no idea. And finally, you get a neurological disease diagnosis. That's very rough. So so good luck and swift recovery. For Janelle. That was very sad to hear. But it gave me a chance to go back through her work history, because a lot of stories about her were, you know, doing biographical information, and wow, a very impressive career in multiple industries. All right. And something that came up on Kickstarter, and this is kind of a return, and we recently played this game as well. So we had a recent game of Forbidden Psalm. Forbidden Psalm is the miniature skirmish game for Morkborg. So Morkborg is the metal, black metal RPG, and Forbidden Psalm uses the same stats and everything. So it's actually, you could cross the characters back and forth between the two games and either play a miniature skirmish game or play them in the RPG themselves. And they are now releasing the End Times edition of Forbidden Psalm. So this will be the definitive edition, and basically what it's going to do is combine the core book and the first expansion, which was the Footsteps of the Mad Wizard. And I noticed we just used the core book when we played. It's really quick to put together your gang, but you choose five miniatures, and then you just roll them up using tables. You roll them up randomly, and there's two stat lines you can choose from. So they either hit really big, or, you know, they either have a really big bonus and a really bad stat, and or they have kind of mid stats. So there's kind of two ways you can stat them out, and then you roll, you know, even the names and things can be rolled on tables. So they're very fun. Each character, each model has a feat and a flaw. And so sometimes you go with, you know, all in strength and you want this big slugger, and then he ends up, you know, being afraid. He like runs in fear every time, you know, he takes damage, or there's a lot of really funny like combinations that sabotage the characters. But it was fun. It reminded me very much of the DCC funnel, because I could see using this skirmish game as a way to kind of funnel create, like, the character that survived the skirmish battle, you know, could be the one that you actually played in the adventure, because you become really attached to these very flawed characters. And the one stat that we didn't know, there is not a dump stat in Morkborg, if you don't know. So there's four stats. And the one that I was using as the dump stat was presence. And I knew that my assumption was that must be the magic stat. You only have one caster in your party. So all of my other characters are going to have, massively negative presence. Well, presence is what you also use for your morale rolls, and it's also what you use to interact with anything. So if you want to pick something up, you have to roll presence, and nobody in my crew could pick anything up, and we ran constantly. And but it was a lot of fun. The oddball stuff you have to work around makes it really fun. And so you do become attached to these very flawed characters with these wacky, you know, generated names.
Is it I think you might have been talking about this on the unboxing you did.
I think so. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it just kind of piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my group seems to not want to play Stargrave anymore.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, maybe I could get him to try that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, Forbidden Psalm, it's really fun. And it's got a lot of, like, flavor. It's got a lot of its own flavor, because basically you're just doing jobs for this wizard. So, So Forbidden Psalm is a 28-millimeter miniatures agnostic game. So you can use any kind of miniatures. And there are a few designers that have Patreons that do digital design for 3D printers that have made specifically stuff to use that has the nice feel of this game. But, of course, like, kit bashing and making, like, cruddy models are part of the fun. So a lot of random generators to create your crew. It's Vreeprix the Mad Wizard is basically who you're working for. And so all of the campaign and all of the different scenarios are about serving him, you know, finding black mushrooms to make him tea, but the black mushrooms infect you and kill you, like turn you into fungus. And he has an obsession with socks. So there's sock gathering missions. So there's a lot of fun narrative built into it. And so in this definitive edition, the core rules haven't changed. They just want to reprint. And I think we did come across a couple of page numbering mistakes, like, you know, refer to page 29. And we weren't sure if that was in the book, in the Forbidden Psalm book, or if that was in the original Morkborg book. But none of the page, there were a few times where the page number didn't make any sense. So they may be doing some corrections for a few of those things to clarify. And in some of the layout, it's hard to read some of it because it's that, you know, overly designed, overly graphically designed, real heavy kind of black metal layout. But yeah, so they're giving it a whole shiny new design, combining everything in the books. And so yeah, better design and rules clarification. So no rules changes, but they're just going to clarify things to make sure stuff that's probably come up over the years, the last few years of play testing or, you know, playing, people will now know exactly what that means, or the order things should be resolved. That's that very often, you know, causes problems. So this will be a hardcover case bound A5 book, or a softcover perfect bound A5 book. With color covers and interiors. The hardcover is printed exclusively for this Kickstarter, and the soft cover will remain in print forever. And it'll be around 180 pages. So if you already have the first two books, the expansion and the core book, you're not getting anything new other than the new design and a little bit maybe more convenience. It's all in one book. But they are also releasing for this campaign a collection of death. So a lot of the mini expansions for Forbidden Psalm that have been created. So Dead Festival, Dead Festival 2, Dungeons and Death, Rotten Bits, Forbidden Wilderness, and Dead Church, the first time that it's been in print, are going to be collected into another 80 to 100 page softcover book. They're also producing a war band book, which is an A5 zine that is basically going to be your war band sheet, you know, kind of your can chronicle the members, and so a really fancy kind of roster sheet for in booklet form for your crew. And the softcover A5 saddle stitch, about 24 pages and very nicely designed. They do some previews of the pages, so very fun thematic design. So yeah, if you haven't gotten into Forbidden Psalm, this is probably a good chance, because individually the first two books buying those, they're probably much more expensive separately than this collected volume. I think you're actually saving quite a bit and getting both of these, and the expansion adds so much more as far as tables and new feats and weapons types and things. There's a lot of different and monsters and things. There's a lot of different effects that are added, and plus now you have, I think, a total of maybe 25 scenarios. It's quite large now. The two combined included the core book and then the new book. You have 25 scenarios contained in these blood soaked pages. So lots to play.
Does it have like good out of game rules? Like, I'm thinking Stargrave has the ship that you work on, you can develop, which is kind of like your base, and then you have different equipment you can gear people up with, and
right, yeah, they
experience and all that.
We just used the core book, so that there may have added some things in the expansion, but because you're kind of directly serving the wizard, there's kind of narrative before and after every scenario of like how you're interacting with the wizard, what he's going to buy from you, like, you know, things that you've gathered have some value. He'll buy some things from you, and other things you can just sell or use on your own. So there isn't like a base. It's like with Frostgrave, yeah, you chose a certain kind of base and you built things onto it to like you give you a laboratory for alchemy or things like that. I don't think, at least in the core book, there wasn't anything between time, but you are basically that Mordheim kind of way at trying anyone that was taken down during the scenario has to roll to see if they die, or has to roll to see what kind of injuries they have going into the next time. It's a little bit more, I think, rules light in between scenarios than the others. So they're just trying to like kind of move you through more of a narrative. But it's deadly. Yeah, it can be quite deadly.
And since the wizard is like your patron, mm-hmm. is he literally like hiring different groups and just like see who comes back alive kind of thing? Or
yeah, and a lot of them, they have options. You can play it competitively or cooperatively. And, you know, they have like round limits. So each of these scenarios will have like a limited number of rounds and an objective. And so you could basically be in competition, or you can just be working together to in these early scenarios, especially, I think, just to generate gold so you can start to outfit your characters a little bit more. Because you start out with only 50 gold, and to have a caster, you have to pay from that 5 gold right off the top. So you don't have a lot left. Like, basically, you're running around with, you know, sticks and shirts. There's not a lot of armor in the first scenarios. So I think some of the earlier ones, and we didn't get past just the very first scenario. But the earlier ones are probably just about generating some resources for your group. But it's fun, and the magic is fun too, because it's all scroll based, so anyone can pick up a scroll and try to use it. But of course, the people with the higher presence stat are going to be more successful at it, and the magic is all randomly chosen. So even when you have a caster, you get a clean and unclean spell. So you have there's like chaos magic is unclean, and then the regular magic is just called clean magic. But you roll randomly for the scroll that you receive. And so some of it's useful, some of it's just a buffing spell, or some of it's, you know, healing. So that's really fun. You don't have you're not throwing fireballs and things. You know, the caster is much less crafted than it would be in like a Frostgrave type game. But it's D20s. So nice and swingy with a D20, and basically no stat is more than a +3, and you'll get some things that'll give you like little additional bonuses. But as far as your stats, +3 or -3 is kind of the whole range, and a lot of things you don't have any kind of bonus in. But but good fun. So we'll put a link to that campaign. So if you haven't dived into that before, I would recommend taking a look. And of course, the PDFs of the core book and the expansion are available now. But this is a whole new shiny redesigned version, so it may be worth checking out. All right, and more wargaming. So we talked previously about Mantic. So Mantic kind of came to us, came to the fans and said, okay, so we've had this idea for a while, and Games Workshop may have heard what we were talking about and beat us to the punch, because they were going to do a large scale kind of apocalypse style for Warpath. Firefight, their kind of sci-fi, like large scale battle game, war game. And, so they're talking about doing that, and they're like, well, wait a minute, if we want even more units on the table, why don't we shrink down the size? Why don't we change the scale of all the units and do kind of an epic scale type game? And then surprisingly, Games Workshop came out with their Horus Heresy. What is it? Horus Heresy version of their miniatures game. So they came out, they had already done the Titan and the Aeronautica Imperialis game. So they just then tied in all of these units. And so now Mantic was trying to decide, what should we do? Do you want a, you know, epic version of Warpath, or, you know, should we just do this as a side thing? Should we just do it as 3D printed models? What should we do? And it looks like the fans have said, we want a full game, and we want you to take it to Kickstarter. In 2024, we're going to get an epic scale Warpath. So this is going to be, and they said they're going to go even bigger than, which is, it's a lot. It's a lot of miniatures. They're going to go even bigger than Games Workshop did with Apocalypse. We're going to get and I think they're going to do true epic scale. So this will be 6mm as opposed to that kind of 8-ish mm that Games Workshop is doing now with their version. So the campaign will launch next year. And this will be a great alternative to us, and probably much more affordable, because I can't even imagine what the prices are for Games Workshop's kind of epic version. You're getting these, you know, these little bases with these little 8mm miniatures on it, but you're probably paying, you know, close to the same price as if you were buying those individual miniatures about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So so the Kings of War rule set that they do for their fantasy line is probably one of the better rank and flank game systems out there. So this is definitely worth checking out if you want to. And price-wise, I think this is going to be much more affordable. They haven't said quite yet if they're going to take this, because they have their Mantic Vault, which they're releasing STL files for 3D printing. But this may eventually get there as well, making it even more affordable. And they can also supplement this game with additional units or maybe terrain features and things through the Mantic Vault. So they have a lot of flexibility through this, and I'm glad to see that they're going to go all out, because they released an early version of the progress version of the rule book, and now they're going to finish it off. And yeah, it's good. It's going to be a full release. I mean, there's a lot of competition out there, and especially from the miniatures agnostic war game crowd, but yeah, it's nice to see they're going to go all in with this and produce an actual game instead of just a version you could play. So yeah, we'll see how this does Kickstarter wise. So they haven't given; they just said sometime next year. So it probably just depends on when they figure out how they want to produce the models and probably find good timing around other major releases and stuff and other big Kickstarters.
They need to get some feedback from Chris after she ordered all those epic scale miniatures that came super mangled or whatever.
Yeah, and just clamshells. Yeah, right. Yeah, so this might make more sense. The tiny, really 10mm or smaller miniatures are really really easy to print on 3D printers. So it takes a lot of the, because they're not heavy at all. They stick to, you don't have problems with adhesion or anything. So those are really easy to print. So I hopefully they support this game in both ways, not only with the production of the starter set, but also, whatever they're doing for this campaign, but also other things. So, and yeah, just if Mantic could really get their kind of their lore and supporting world building together, I think they could actually be a legitimate rival. It just, right now it seems like they just don't care enough about that to release books or back kind of fluff of the game to get people really connected to it. So that's the big advantage that Games Workshop has, is they have just amazing narrative and amazing world building that people get attached to. And when it feels more generic or like a pale imitation, then yeah, sometimes that works against them. Even if you got great rules and even if you got decent miniatures, still people want to play in that more compelling world. So we'll see.
Yeah, they need to hire a big time writer and make them essentially like a showrunner, to basically design a lore or like a continuity for them.
Yeah, I wonder why they don't do that. I wonder if there's like egos with like the company owners, because I think they're all former refugees of Games Workshop that started Mantic, and I wonder if it's just they want to kind of have their input and have their little inside jokes and stuff, and they don't really think it's that important. I don't know what's kind of stopping them, but I wonder if there's ego or something involved in not wanting to hand it over to somebody that could really make something that rivaled, especially with the that big misstep with Age of Sigmar. Mantic could have really taken advantage of that and capitalized on that, and they just kind of, they did make a book where you can play your old fantasy miniatures in Kings of War, and that was about it. Yeah, they didn't really step up and become more aggressive to say, no, we are the fantasy rank and flank game.
There's if they are all Games Workshop, former Games Workshop people, then there's a couple big names out there who I don't think are officially under the employment of GW anymore. Andy Law and Graham Davis. They're literally, I got in a little trouble on Facebook, but they're literally, in my opinion, wasting their time. They have this thing called the Rookery. I don't know if you've heard of that. And it's something they started like 3 years ago, and it was going to be like they were going to make adventures and a game world and eventually a game. And three years later, they're still just like a Discord channel and a Facebook page. Like they're not doing anything. Not doing anything. I even ran, they had an adventure they wanted people to beta test. So I signed up and I got the adventure, and I fit it, even though it didn't really make sense. I fit it into the Forbidden Lands campaign I was running at the time. And it was pretty fun. And but they never produced it, and they never they haven't produced anything. So like, it's like they need a job. Give them a job.
Wow. Yeah, I wonder what's going on with that. Maybe they just need that corporate structure, somebody like, you know, cracking a whip for them to meet some deadlines or something. Yeah.
Something. I don't know. Their Discord channel is infuriating because it's degenerated to just like, what's your favorite color dyes, you know? And it's like, oh my God, you guys said you were going to make games and you're just wasting my time.
Wow. Oh, that's, that's too bad.
All right, rant over. Sorry.
Okay, no, not a problem. Well, somebody that's not wasting his time would be Tom Bloom. So Tom Bloom is the author of the webcomic Six Billion Demons, and also the mech TTRPG Lancer. So the very, very popular Lancer that just got the deal to be published by Dark Horse. So Dark Horse is publishing Lancer, and the comic is being published, I think, by Image, right? Some other company is publishing Kill 6 Billion Demons. And Tom Bloom is now releasing on his itch account, Magna Gothica Malgast. There's a colon in between there. So Magna Gothica, subtitle Malgast. And that is a high energy kind of gothic skirmish game. So he's trying to out Grim Dark Warhammer 40K in this like insane level of demon and metal kind of. So he's saying heavy metal, goth, and punk influenced. So he's the writer and artist for Kill 6 Billion Demons and has released this game on itch on fittingly October 31st. So on Halloween, he released this game. And a blurb about the setting is Anzenmezeron, the city of 1 billion corpses, where death is broken. What dies in the Black City never truly dies, and it may be cut apart, scathed into a million pieces, thrown into the wind, burnt and salted, but it will still return. So the whole place is sliding slowly into hell, and that's the setting for a horror war game. So this is a little bit different take. So it's a 2-4 player skirmish game designed specifically for a virtual tabletop. So it's featuring tactical necromancer action. It's going to use a square grid with the same dimensions as a chessboard. And the artist and designer himself has already produced assets. So along with the rules that you can get from itch is a zip file of tokens to represent your warband. So you don't have to search out art or anything. He's already illustrated it for you. So some people say it has a certain resemblance, because of the chessboard, to Brawl Arcane, which is a game that Chris and I played a bit, which is a lot of fun. That the chessboard thing kind of giving you a limited field just with a little bit of terrain and a little bit of mechanics for getting around feels really nice. But Malgast is a little less minimalistic, so maybe a little heavier and what goes on in that space. So the character that's depicted on the page to promote the game is Gore Grinder, a man-machine hybrid with steam hammers for hands. And your group of fighters is called the Black Mass. So a Black Mass consists of a necromancer and 5 minions. And there are, in the background story of the setting, there are 6 houses that your mass may be aligned with. The Holy Abhorrers, the private military company Carcass, C-A-R-C-A-S-S, there's 6 different houses, all with very evocative art. And Bloom has also included a soundtrack for each faction. So I guess that works well with a VTT. You can kind of, you know, have a little playlist going. So whenever it's your turn, you can hear your theme song playing, which will be an interesting idea. So on Twitter, Bloom wrote about this game, "I've been in a weird fugue state. Most of the game was illustrated and laid out in the past 11 days. I did it all myself, all the game design, layout, writing, and art. I really hope you enjoy this. It has been an insane project and some of the most work I've done on anything." So yeah, this is 100% his baby, his dark metal, undead necromancy baby. And if you like Kill 6 Billion Demons and metal music, this may be something worth trying out. And interesting, because, you know, it's if it's on itch, it's going to be a digital release. And specifically saying this is for playing on VTTs is an interesting way to to set it up. And hopefully if someone with some technical know-how likes this game, they can set up like a package and they can do the JSON file or whatever that would produce not only the, you know, the raster sheets for the war bands, but then all the maps and things that you would need to play on as just a simple install for one of the, you know, the established VTTs like Foundry or Roll20. But
we should try it.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, this sounds and the price is a very affordable $6.66, of course. Nah,
of course.
Yes. So yeah, it looks like a really fun project. His art is really evocative and fun and just insanely over the top. And if there is metal music that you can play while we're playing it, yeah, we should definitely try it out. Tactical Necromancer. That's cool.
The fact that it's VTT specific and playing on sort of a chessboard layout, that intrigues me because everything you said about the game really just sounded like Mork Borg and Mordheim.
Right. Yeah.
You know, yes. So it definitely needed something else to make it unique. So the way you play might be the part that makes it cool. You know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I'm curious to see the rules. He's got some sample pages, some spreads from the rule book, and you know, the great illustration and layout. It's a very readable but very cool looking book, and so it'd be fun to read, you know, how he came up with the different houses and how they have maybe different you know, abilities or different approaches to fighting. So yeah, we'll have to try this out, and if there's no content or copyright ID on the metal music, then we can have an awesome stream with like metal music blasting the whole time. And it would be really fun to, depending on whose turn it is, change the track. That would be very funny.
Yeah, if there's any way in the game to kind of measure who's winning in real time, yeah, you're like, oh, I'm winning. We're throwing on some Dio.
Yeah, right. Nice. Yeah, so that's available. Oh, yeah, and one more thing that was a little bit depressing, there is a very reasonable Humble Bundle as well that I should probably mention because I think it's going to go away. It's only got a week or so left, but a Roll20 Humble Bundle. And oh, no, I mentioned it last week. That's right. I mentioned it last week, and they're adding... They said they were adding mystery games. Well, they just added the whole package on Roll20 for Dragonbane. So Dragonbane's got a gorgeous rule book, all of the pre-gen characters, all the maps, all the stuff that I busted my ass to put together for Albert Rodeo is now already made for Roll20. So if you're already stuck in the Roll20 world, this is a great opportunity. I don't know if I can bring myself to,
One of us or both of us is getting it for Alchemy.
Yeah, right. That's right. And I think that'll be a much nicer presentation. Yeah. Yeah, but we'll have it. Yeah, so that was the big announcement. That's right. We talked about that last week. So the Humble Bundle for Roll20 now includes a full set, like the entire core set for Dragonbane. Yikes. So that's a lot. Yeah, so a lot of good Free League stuff.
Did you know, I didn't know this, and if you said it on the show last week, I apologize for missing it, but did you know that Vassin was free on drive-through on Halloween?
Yes, yeah, I tweeted tweeted that with the link for it. That's great, because that game has not gone on any kind of discount, and it's a really playable game. Mm-hmm. Plus, there's an adventure already in the core book to start you out, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. Super cool.
Yeah. So that was definitely a great opportunity. And I think I really like that style of game divorced from Lovecraft. You know, I think that's a nice... I've enjoyed kind of coming up with how that game will run and not having the burden of Cthulhu looming. So you can still have... Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because it's not like I... don't like the Lovecraft stuff, because I do, but that's always been like the go-to for horror games. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I totally feel you. It's nice to do a different thing.
Yeah, I'm surprised how much in the adventures that we played so far, and I think even in the Lost Mountain saga, the tension between modernity, like, you know, the pagan past and the kind of magical past and the modernity and Christian modern times of the 19th century, that tension between Christianity and the old ways is very interesting in a lot of those stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they play that up a lot. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Yeah, so very, very different. I mean, I think if there might be some people that are uncomfortable or don't like that dynamic, but it's very different from you know, what
read a history book.
Yeah, right. From what they do with a lot of the Call of Cthulhu style games. Nice. All right, so that is going to do it for this week. So yeah, lots of little releases and interesting things. Yeah, we should definitely try the. If we can remember the title of it, that would be even better. The Magna Gothica.
I'm calling it double M.
Double M, yes. M, colon M. Yes.
Yeah.
But that looks it looks fun to play. And I definitely think we could get Chris in on that as well, because she's a big...
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, she's a
I've
big...
I've never played anything with Chris. That'd be cool.
Yeah, yeah. She's a big fan of Tom Bloom. All right. So that will do it for this week. So where can people find you, Matt?
Oh, I'm on Threads and Instagram. It's at Hargald, H-A-A-R-G-A-L-D. Mm-hmm. Usually posting about games. Actually posted about the Janelle Jacquet thing not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And yeah, working on my Weird West game.
Oh, nice. Excellent.
Making a whole game is a way different slog than making, like, you know, adventure sites or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Then you got to get to
the... second guess yourself a lot.
Oh, yeah, right. And then when you play test it all gets torn apart anyhow, so you got to, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Got to
count on you and Will to ruin my dreams.
This just isn't working, man.
Yeah. What is this shit? Yeah. Exactly. Nice. But no, how about you?
Oh, so I'm still doing my single panel gag cartoon, so Abuse Cartoons on YouTube and Twitch. And last week, yesterday, I had some delicious black truffle baby star ramen snacks that blew me away. I thought they were going to be some super expensive deluxe thing. They were only like $1.50 and they tasted amazing. So it's imagine like truffle salt on top of like dried ramen noodles. It was amazing. But so you can read that cartoon on GoComics. So gocomics.com/domesticabuse is the archive of that single panel gag cartoon. I draw two of those a week on the live stream and chat with the chat and desperately hope for inspiration from our discussions for some of these cartoons. And if you like what we're doing here with the weekly, please consider becoming a weakling on Patreon. So patreon.com/upturntable. And then upturntable.com is the website for everything that we're doing. There's links on there for shopping with Noble Knights or DriveThruRPG, and those are affiliate links that'll help us help support what we're doing. If you don't want to, you know, back something on Patreon. Also on this live stream, there's a join button below for the YouTube membership. So YouTube membership will get you access to audiobooks and actual plays and things that we only post there. And as well as on the Patreon, there is an RSS feed of what you're hearing now. So the entire audio of the live stream goes up on the RSS feed for audio only. And I will be moving, I've had a couple of requests now of doing audio only for the actual plays so that they're a bit easier to listen to in a bit smaller, more portable files. So a lot of people don't like using YouTube. If you don't pay the premium, it's not a very usable app. So audio only has been requested. So you're going to get some audio of all of our Star Trek and Vesen and Nave adventures coming up.
Cool.
So, yeah, so thanks for joining us. And thank you, Matt. I really appreciate always last minute. You can help me out. I appreciate having someone to have discussions with. You always fill in some great details that I didn't think about. And you also send me like the Janelle Jacquez situation. You were the one to bring that to my attention. So thanks so much for all that you do to help help the weekly. So I'll be seeing you. I'll be seeing you tomorrow. For some Star Trek.
Oh, yeah, for Star Trek.
Yes. Yeah. So bring your bikini. That's all I'm going to say. So a little R&R may be in order for the...
Are we going to the J.J. Abrams universe?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No, it's not quite that explicit. But
okay.
you'll be able to catch some rays, possibly, for your...
Are we doing one of those... Paradise Planet's Gone Wrong episode.
I don't know. We could.
No, shit. All right.
So thanks for joining us, everyone. And we'll be back just after this to talk to chat, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.